This is Project Shadow.
Hello and welcome to episode 6, the very late episode 6 of Project Shadow, the internet podcast for horror and conspiracy gamers. I'm your host Kevin, and I'm really, really sorry. We are running a little bit late. I'm well aware of this. It's now the new year, and the last episode was scheduled to come towards the tail end of October, the start of November. But honestly, I have a reason, and it's nothing to do with ETs or ancient evil or anything like that, and is actually quite mundane. As you may have known if you've listened to earlier episodes, I've been working over in China for a while. I came to the end of my time in China in December, but this meant was I had to send most of my things back by sea significantly before the time that I left. Including the things that were sent back was all my recording equipment. So that means I've had to sit back and wait for my things to arrive. They finally arrived just under a week ago. We've been able to collect all my things. So I've been off the air for almost 2 months, which is absolutely wonderful. But we're back now. Episode 6 was supposed to be the final episode of Season 1. What's actually going to happen is I'm going to roll right on into the second season. So it's going to be an extended Season 1. It's going to be more like an American season than a British season. So we're back, hopefully getting regular again, and this is what we've got for you today. Now, first thing, we've got our gaming section, we've got a book review, going back to the White Wolf Fold for this one, because they've got another source book called Mysterious Places that we're going to take a look at. For the media section, we're going to go and do the thing that I've been planning since day dot for Project Shadow. I'm going to take a look at the video game that is Resident Evil 4. And finally, we have a creature. The focus file for this week is a traditional creature given a slightly more modern spin. I'm going to play with the nasty evil with Valentine's Day just around the corner as well, which is the succubus. Now, because things are a little bit hectic at the moment, we're not actually going to throw a new section this week. So I'm going to go straight on and throw you into the gaming section. But anyway, welcome back to Project Shadow.
Gaming.
Way back in the mists of time. Way back in the mists of time reviewed a book by White Wolf, ostensibly for their World of Darkness line. The book was called Urban Legends, and it was designed as a series of resources and plot hooks that a GM, a storyteller, if you like, could use in their own games. Now, I liked it, and I viewed it not merely as a good World of Darkness resource, but a great general resource for a variety of horror settings. So, the book I've just been reading has similar merits, and indeed it's another book by White Wolf. And again, it's for the World of Darkness, and it's called Mysterious Places. This supplement brings together a group of 9 strange locations for you to bring into your campaign. And like Urban Legends, it's quite an eclectic bunch. The 9 locations are each pitched in a similar fashion. A short introduction and overview, a well-thought-out history and a study of any characters and specific rules surrounding the locale. Each location is polished off with a selection of ideas on how to use the setting for your own campaign or adventures. As there are 9 locations chronicled over more than 160 pages, there's a fair amount of information presented for each location. There is art interspersed throughout the book, but it's not a terribly art-heavy book, so it delivers a pretty decent word count. The 9 settings are a mixed bag, although almost all are worthwhile considerations. For me, the pick of the settings were actually all located at the front of the book. The university setting and the swimming hole location really standing out for me. This isn't to say the other settings aren't, you know, worthwhile. It's merely that some of the later ones seem to pale after the inspiration formed by the earlier chapters. Now, this book, like Urban Legends, doesn't spoon-feed you. What you won't find here are gaming-by-numbers adventures. What you will find is everything you need to put your own adventure together. So the ideas will take a little time for you to put together and to get into effect, but I reckon with some of these ideas it should be worth the effort. And anyway, as GMs, aren't we always winging it to a degree anyway, no matter what the situation? So, an overall look at the book. It's clever, it's inventive, and by and large it's well written. There are places where the quality of writing does seem to flag a little bit, but overall it holds together pretty well. Again, as with Urban Legends, I do wonder how much use this will get from the average vampire storyteller. It doesn't seem the kind of thing that most vampire players I know would be interested in, but it is still a great World of Darkness resource, especially, again, for Mortals campaigns. Even if you take it out of the World of Darkness, it will still be useful. Perhaps even more so. After reading through the book, I earmarked potential settings for future Dark Conspiracy and Witchcraft campaigns, although most of the locations lend themselves more to supernatural settings rather than scientific-style horror. More than that, there are settings here that would tweak well to any game with a fantasy element, meaning that it's an undeniably versatile book. So, to sum up, you have 9 solid and well-realized plot seeds, all complemented with good ideas and good information, enough to spur any GM worth his salt into action. So, if you're a player of World of Darkness, or, again, pretty much any horror or conspiracy or even dark fantasy game, I'd say this is certainly worth a look. I'm going to go 8 out of 10 on this one, because I am quite impressive. I think it's going to be a very useful book for most GMs, at least ones that are prepared to put the work in. So, that's Mysterious Places by White Wolf.
Quick, shut that door, man.
As if that's going to stop it.
Look, it's not my fault the Elder Sign didn't work.
That's because it's shaped like a star.
No, it's shaped like a tree.
Star!
Tree!
Star! Well, it's too late now. We're the last ones.
What about Lady Hetherington?
She set on fire, then exploded.
And Father O'Leary?
He plucked out his own eyeballs and ate them.
Damn. I wish I'd visited Yogg-Sothoth.com more often.
Yogg-Sothoth.com?
Yes, you know, that Call of Cthulhu website. Jolly useful. It's got forums, news, even interviews with the great, and the undead.
Oh, I do wish you hadn't said that.
Oh, my lord! Stay away from me, you horror! No!
Well, you'll not take me! What? No, please, no!
The Yogg Radio, a Cthulhu podcast from Yogg-Sothoth.com.
Media.
Okay, I've put this off and put it off, but as Season 1 now draws to its close, I'm going to do the media review I'd promised myself right from the very start. We've looked at books, we've done TV, and we've looked at a few movies, so it's about time I bit the bullet and reviewed a video game. Now, as I mentioned a couple of episodes ago, there is no shortage of horror video games out there. So, who do we turn to for this review? Well, it may be a couple of years old now, but I wanted to take a look at Capcom's Resident Evil 4, if only to try and wash the taste of the latest Resident Evil out of my brain. Which, don't get me wrong, it's a fun film in its way, but that's a review for another time. Now, Resident Evil 4. This picks up on the story of Leon Kennedy, several years after he appeared as a rookie cop in Resident Evil 2. Leon is now all grown up, bless him, and he's just finished special training and has been assigned as a presidential security officer. His first job, though, is quite a big one. He's got to travel to Europe to track down the president's daughter, Ashley Graham, who has gone missing. And so it is that Leon finds himself in the heart of what we presume to be the Spanish countryside, with a pair of local cops who you just know are not going to be long for this world. Before long, Leon finds himself surrounded by some rather aggressive Spanish peasants with some strange behaviour patterns, and his day just doesn't get any better anytime soon. Gone are the zombies and the bio-organic weapons from the earlier games. These guys are not slow, and they're not afraid to get involved with weapons either. All your old zombie combat tactics could need to be re-evaluating if you're moving to this game straight from a Resident Evil, an earlier Resident Evil game. As the game progresses and Leon's quest to save Ashley continues, he has to face several new enemies, including some maniac wearing a sack over their head and carrying a chainsaw, as well as making a couple of new friends along the way, and, of course, importantly, meeting an old one. The gameplay and the graphics are a vast improvement on earlier installments, and it's a pretty decent-sized adventure, although it does speed up on subsequent playthroughs. So, as role-playing gamers, what can we steal? Well, most of the name characters could serve as solid inspirations for PCs or NPCs. Of the creatures, the most useful are probably the infected villagers themselves. Rather than viral problems, this time around it's an insectoid parasite that's behind all the hostility. Also of note are the chameleonic insects that lurk in subterranean caverns, and an especially dangerous regenerating creature that can only be destroyed by killing the small parasites inside it. In terms of game mechanics, this is usually accomplished through the use of a sniper rifle with an attached thermographic scope, which could make life quite difficult. The plot is solid, with a few nice twists, but probably a little wanting for logic in some places. Certainly not the kind of plot that you could live wholesale. That said, though, it is a corking game, and well worth a few hours, or many hours, of your life. As games go, no matter what Halo players or World of Warcraft players may say, this really does still stand out as one of the better games that has been released, at least for the last generation of consoles, or the current generation, seeing as how slow some of the new ones are going. It's damn fine, and because it's damn fine, and I am such a Resident Evil fanboy, as says the man who recently acquired a Star's shoulder patch for his cult, I'm going to go quite high on the review. I'm going to give it 8.5 out of 10. I was going to give it 9, but, you know, I need somewhere to go when Resident Evil 5 comes out. Oh my god, that's going to be an expensive day. Anyway, yes, Resident Evil 4 for the GameCube and the Sony PlayStation and whatever else you can get it for these days. 8.5 out of 10. A good collection of influences for any horror gamer.
Focus Files.
For our Focus File this week, I'm going to take a look at a traditional monster and bring it up to date for a modern horror campaign. The Succubus. Succubi can be difficult creatures to integrate into a campaign. The nature of their operation can be a bit near the knuckle for many gamers, and it can be hard to make them effective villains, but it can be done. One of the creatures in the original Dark Conspiracy game was a succubus variant called the Leetu. As a GM, I read their background and thought them brilliant villains, but wondered how to integrate them into a game. In the end, it was almost 10 years before I actually felt experienced enough as a GM to do the creatures justice, and to integrate them successfully into an adventure. And in a group with a fairly even male-female balance, they actually became one of the most effective and unnerving villains I used, especially for the male characters. They also allowed me to create an emotion rarely felt in role-playing. Poignancy. The Succubus is quite different from Dark Conspiracy's Lalitu, at least in the way I'm going to present it now. But it can create similar end results. For in this case, the true succubus is a non-human life form, a parasite. A fully grown succubus is an eel-like creature, 45 to 60 centimeters long. Its ventral surface, its belly, if you like, is covered with fine tentacular fronds. These can carry neuroelectrical impulses from the succubus to the host. Succubus spawn enter the host through the female womb, typically delivered by an unwitting, unintentional male carrier. From here, the immature succubus makes its way to the spinal column, where it takes roots down near the reproductive organs and starts to feed and grow. As it grows, it extends tendrils into the nervous system and also grows a unique organ in its tail, which extends back down into the womb. This organ creates and releases a chemical that effectively renders the carrier sterile, whilst the growing succubus takes control of its host. This is not direct control, but merely the creation of certain urges in the host, urges that will benefit the succubus's life cycle. The succubus organism is hermaphroditic. It contains both male and female organs and can reproduce independently. However, to do this, they need a high-protein liquid food source. The perfect solution to this is human sperm, semen. The succubus generates in the host the urge to copulate, consuming the semen to aid in the succubus's own reproduction. These urges are then maintained and even amplified as the young are born into the womb and need both sustenance of their own and a way to travel to a new host. The spawn themselves are not directly harmful to the male host beyond consuming sperm whilst hosted there, but they will travel into any other females the male chooses to bed. However, as the fully grown succubus in the female matures, it needs more protein. It correspondingly releases impulses to increase the host's drive and also exudes chemicals akin to pheromones to help lure more males. In short, the woman develops an almost insatiable drive and the means to support it. Such victims often earn themselves unfortunate reputations or find themselves in unsavoury lines of work. In the final stages of this creature's life cycle, it stops breeding but continues to need more food, an urge which itself passes on to the host. They become increasingly aggressive, with the host's physical strength now also augmented. The host can develop some unpleasant culinary urges and will kill or maim to satisfy these urges. Strangely, as the bearer has become sterile, a lot of the aggression can subsequently be borne out against juveniles, especially infants. Even as a mature succubus passes away, often one of its own spawn has been waiting for the chance to fully grow, and the cycle begins anew. Fortunately, the rise in popularity of physical contraception has contained the growth and spread of these creatures, and their spawn are often killed by spermicides or contraceptive treatments. Such remedies are completely ineffective against fully grown adult specimens, however. The hosts are no more difficult to kill than a normal human. However, the real trick is eliminating the parasites without harming the host. The most effective treatment is salting the earth. And the best cure found so far is the regular administration of bromide, more specifically potassium bromide, which was supposedly used by the armies years ago to control their soldiers' drives and has been used to follow operations. However, the regular administration of bromide to the host will slowly kill the parasites over a 2 or 3 week period, and if administered over a long enough period, 4 to 6 weeks, it will physically break down the succubus's body. Physical surgery is dangerous to the point of near impossibility, although laser and sonic approaches may prove to be more successful. For a creature like this, game statistics are relatively unimportant, but finding the right way to tell the story is. They can be used as part of a standard investigation, and as such will work well in an X-Files style game. Or they can be used closer to home, especially as a rebuke to any characters with a tendency to think with their pants. So, ladies and gentlemen, I present to you a rather unpleasant infection. The succubus.
Underground.
Right then. Now, before I put this episode to bed, I've actually got a few thanks to hand out. First and foremost, I would like to thank Alan Hoskins. It was Alan that brought my attention to the fact that after Podomatic had a bit of a hiccup a month or two back, all the early episodes of Project Shadow disappeared. Now, this is where I need to give out thanks number two. And thanks number two go to Lee Williams, who has, in the last week, provided me with an entire back catalogue of my own podcast, and it should all now be restored on the website. You may be asking, why the hell do I not have my own backups? The answer to that question is pretty easy. Not too long ago, the computer I was doing all the recording on had a bit of a terminal hard drive crash, so I lost all those. Podomatic crashed and lost them all again, and I only recently found out I was left with nothing. So, many thanks to Alan, many thanks to Lee. Without you guys, I wouldn't even know that this had happened and wouldn't have been able to correct it. So, many, many, many thanks. Also thanks to Lee for the "This is Project Shadow" bite at the start of this podcast. Another person I would like to thank, if you've looked on the website recently, you would have found, quite entirely possibly, that I've got a resources section on there now. There's not much there at the moment, but what I do have is a banner advert for the website with some astounding artwork on it. Now, I would like to thank for this Mr. Craig J. Spearing. Now, Craig and I met on the Urban Dead web browser game. He is one of the most talented illustrators I have ever had the pleasure of coming to know. Feel free to go and check out his work at www.craigjspearing.com. He has some great work across a variety of genres on his website, and is a really nice guy to boot, has helped me out for a couple of things. So many thanks, Craig, for your help on giving me the art for that web banner. So three people to thank for that. Thank you very much. As it stands, I'm now back in the UK, which means I can keep tabs on that website with more frequency now. So if you haven't downloaded from the website, check us out on projectshadowpodcast.googlepages.com. You can reach our forum from there, and please use it. It would be really nice to have some people back on there. I know I've been away for a while, but I'd like to try and get things moving there. Our next episode will be coming up, I hope, in 2 or 3 weeks' time, seeing as things now are returning to some semblance of normalcy. So, for now, it is time to say goodbye. But as usual, I'm going to leave with a little bit of music. This week we have a song by Ed Colton, and the song is very simply called Conspiracy. I'm Kevin. This is Project Shadow. Goodbye. Watch out.
underground, overground, wumbling free.